I'm Matt Dixon, and welcome to the Purple Patch Podcast. The mission of Purple Patch is to empower and educate every human being to reach their athletic potential. Through the lens of athletic potential, you reach your human potential. The purpose of this podcast is to help time-starved people everywhere integrate sport into life. Now, you might know I'm getting a little bit long in the tooth. But I'm still ambitious. I still want to sharpen life, and I want to future-proof myself to ensure that I have the greatest quality of the life for the time that I'm around. And then one of the tools that I leverage is Inside Tracker, because by taking a look inside, what I get to do is understand where I should place my focus in all aspects of performance so that I can show up performance-ready daily, feel better, have greater energy, and ultimately perform. I've got to keep up with the kiddies now, haven't I? The same could be said for Purple Patch athletes. A lot of the athletes that I help guide towards better performance utilize exactly the same service, and you can too. It's very, very simple. All you need to do is head to insidetracker.com/purplepatch. Now, what they'll do is they'll assess your biometrics and combine the results of those biometrics assessment with the expertise of the team of scientists at Inside Tracker so that you get a personal action plan and you can prioritize where you're going to emphasize your focus and actions. It's very great. And also, on top of it, you're going to get some actionable results so you can track and see the measurable gains that you make in your performance. InsideTracker.com/purplepatch and use this code while you're there, PurplePatchPro20. That's going to get you 20% off everything at the store. Enjoy the show. And welcome to the Purple Patch Podcast. As ever, your host, Matt Dixon. And today, well, I rub my hands in glee and anticipation. You might remember a few weeks ago that I talked about a special series that we were going to be doing around case studies of Purple Patch athletes, some applied learning, if you will. In other words, hearing the stories and insights from athletes that are a part of the Purple Patch program and how they've managed to leverage the methodology to facilitate performance in their life. Now, we kicked it off a couple of weeks ago with Mike Kane, an athlete that I coach. And what we learned with Mike is that he had a shift in perspective away from fitness, and more towards health and habits. And it unlocked effectiveness, not just in his training, but also how he showed up as a leader. Today, we're going to welcome two Purple Patch athletes. Their names, Jeff Lipschultz and Marcel Lopez. They both have some powerful stories around how they've managed to leverage sport to help them show up in life and also shift in their perspective to get more results from the effort that they're putting in. In Jeff's story, you're going to hear about his arc from, well, a youth that wasn't full of sport, but actually how he has leveraged a journey and how he has really leaned into community in giving back to people to amplify all aspects of life. And Marcel has been an evolution in thinking and approach for him to yield results that he never thought were possible. It's a really compelling couple of stories. We're going to line them up back to back as a double meat and potatoes today. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get going, well, let's do Matt's Musings. Yes, folks, it is Matt's Musings, and I want to tell you a little story. Just the other day, I was sitting with an athlete, and we were side by side at the computer, and we Googled something around nutrition as it related to triathlon performance. You know what came up? 15 different results with 15 different opinions. And when I looked at the source of the results, many of the people there brought a certain amount of credibility and expertise. No matter what information you're chasing, it is incredibly confusing and time-consuming. In a life that I'm sure, I imagine for you, is already plenty full of stress and, of course, competing demands. I imagine it must be so tough to know where you should place your focus, what to prioritize on, so that you can get the results that you want. Well, guess what? I've got pretty good expertise in much of these areas and a little bit of a reputation and proven results of unlocking performance in athletes just like you. including more than 1,500 time-starved athletes who have qualified to World Championship events. And so what we've developed is programming, support, education specific to you so that we can cut through the noise, so that we can filter the conflicting blizzard of information. What we do is remove the complexity, reduce so much of the confusion, simplify your training life without compromising your results. I don't believe in diluting or lowering expectations. Instead, I want to be your partner in unlocking effectiveness so that you can achieve your goals. It's very simple. All you need to do is reach out to us, info@purplepatchfitness.com. We'll set up a complimentary consultation so that we can understand your challenges and what your goals are. We'll then get you on program very quickly, within 24 hours, with absolutely no risk for you, because we're so confident if you don't love it, after 30 days, we'll give you your money back. How does that sound? info@purplepatchfitness.com. All right, with that, let's hear from the boys. It's Jeff and Marcel. We'll let Jeff take the stage first. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the meat and potatoes. All right, once again, is the meat and potatoes. And goodness me, I feel like this is long overdue. I finally get to welcome to the show Purple Patch legend, the cruise director, as we call him, Jeff Lipschultz. Thank you very much for joining the Purple Patch podcast, Jeff.
Well, thanks, Coach. I don't know about legend, but cruise director, yeah, I've been a part of Purple Patch for quite a while and have met a lot of great people by being involved with our community. Absolutely. Somehow got that little moniker, maybe self-proclaimed, who knows?
Who knows? But it's a great one. It's well earned, and we're going to dig into that a little bit later. The special show that we are, series of shows that we're actually doing, is sort of digging under the hood of Purple Patch and getting to know some of the athletes and their journey. And I think your journey is one that a lot of people will be actually both inspired by, but also I think hopefully by the end of this conversation, maybe shift their mindset and their perception of what sport can do for them, and maybe how to get the most out of their sport. And I'm going to not dig into that too much now. I'm going to allow our conversation to hopefully unearth that. But to get us going, as I always like to do, I'd like to know people's background, where they originate from, family, situation, etc. So just kick us off. Give us a little bit of the Jeff Lipschultz profile, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, you love to call me a Texan, Matt, but I am originally from Chicago. Grew up there for quite a while, and sport was not a part of my life at all. I learned how to ride a bike at 10 years old, long story short. And sport wasn't a big part of my life. I don't think I was sedentary. We went out and did stuff as kids and all that, but I really didn't discover sports until I had gained about 4 sizes on my belt when I started working out of college and realized I was on a road to I don't know, potentially obesity. And my father had passed away at an early age, relatively speaking, had never met his granddaughters. And I vowed that I was going to do everything I could to meet my grandchildren someday if I have those. And so I embraced cycling in around 2002. And then triathlon came into my life around 2014. So took a long time to get here, but glad I did.
And you're... before we dig into the sports, I want to get there. But what do you do professionally? I always think it's important to understand sort of what people do on a professional sense.
I grew up an engineer, but through a lot of different twists and turns of a career, I'm now a senior director of HR for a technology company out of Palo Alto, one that actually is familiar to you, and. Yeah, and so it's funny to be an engineer in that role because you're trying to engineer things all the time, but it's wonderful to work with people. Yeah,
fantastic. And there's a story there, but we won't go into it today. We want to talk about Jeff yourself. But sports growing up, so not your you weren't one of these puppies that was here, there, and everywhere with sports. And I'm always interested. You talked about getting into bicycles first. Great, that's your strength. You did not grow up swimming either, yes? You're a classic adult onset swimmer.
I like to think of myself as even beyond that. I didn't even know how to swim. There was a lesson, and back in 14, someone told me about a lesson at the rec center near me, and they said, you should really take a lesson and try this. So on Halloween of 2014, I went to the gym, swam across the pool and said, okay, now I know I won't drown when I go to my lesson on Monday.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, I really didn't know how to swim. I mean, and I was actually, I don't know that I was afraid of water or anything. It just didn't interest me at all. My parents, I think, tried to get me into swimming lessons. It didn't take. So didn't know how to swim. And I'm flat-footed, bow-legged, so I tried running when I got out of college with a friend, and I got shin splints like the first week. So it was a disaster. So it was like, running's not for me. But at the same time I was trying the swimming thing, my brother-in-law said, hey, come do a turkey trot when you visit over Thanksgiving. And I'm like, okay, I'll try. Bought a pair of shoes, ran for a month, and went and did a turkey trot. And that's how my triathlon career started. Is taking on two sports that I had no idea what I was doing.
And I guess the one thing that you had in confidence was cycling. Yeah, you'd done cycling tours and things like that. Yeah. So did you ever race bikes per se, or was it more just a passion of riding and exploring sort of thing?
Well, you know what they call two guys riding a bike in Dallas, right?
Come on then.
A race.
But, okay.
So, yeah. So I never raced like you're alluding to, but I've been riding since 2002, and we've ridden. I rode across the country with Trek Travel in 2000 something or other 10, and we did the Pyrenees, my buddies and I, in 13, and we've done, you know, Mount Evans and all the fun stuff in Colorado. So I mean, I've done a lot of different stuff on a bike, including going to what I call T-shirt rides. And yeah, you go to the front of a T-shirt ride, it's a race.
Of course.
So I mean, hanging on the back of some team all matching jerseys and being able to finish with them, that's like an accomplishment in Dallas, right? So cycling has definitely evolved for me over time. But even with all that in 14 and that story I was describing, it was like cycling was getting boring. How do I make cycling more interesting? And adding two sports to it actually was the answer. It was kind of bizarre, but it worked out that way.
And two sports, I think a lot of people underappreciate this about the sport of triathlon, so multiple disciplines, is that, you know, your story is almost the classic triathlon story, because I very seldom, unless you have someone that comes out of a true multi-sport background, that doesn't enter the sport with a very clear weakness. And as human
or
beings,
two.
We don't, or two in your case, yeah, but we... As humans, we don't tend to, or many of us don't take on a challenge in which we're genuinely not very good at it to begin. So not too many people start from scratch when they make it up 35 years of age and say, I'm going to learn skiing now. It's just like, I don't ski. I'm not a skier. Triathlon is really interesting because it exposes in you. You can bring like a good strength, cycling. The other thing that many triathletes don't have and you don't have, not going through sports as a youngster, is you haven't developed the mindset, the athletic mindset. You actually, ironically, because I believe it's a performance mindset that you've developed in other areas of your life, professionally, obviously, but you haven't gone through the experiences that may be like very different than sort of me growing up, where I grew up a swimmer, I was an elite swimmer, and I went all the way, because I'm swimming college, and then I go to triathlon. So I had a toolbox of what training is like, how to manage fatigue, what's good fatigue, what's bad fatigue, what's normal pain, what's abnormal pain, all of these things, how to step up. You don't have that. So you're very youthful in your triathlon career. I know it's 10 years, but you're pretty youthful. And yet here we are. And in fact, it was one of my favorite competitors in 2021 was in St. George when you qualified, went to the 70.3 World Championships. I know that was a bigger thing, but you've done multiple Ironman races as well by now. How many half Ironman distance races have you done? You've done a lot of them.
I've done, I think, 12 halves, 5 fulls. Yeah, and you know, and a smattering of other littler ones. You bring up an interesting point about the training side of things, Matt, because that was what was missing. Even if you've been cycling for all these years, you just kind of learn by osmosis. You learn from your friends, right? That's a beautiful community that cycling has, is you can learn how to ride a bike with your friends. But when I started learning how to run, I had ITBS by, I don't know, 6 months, by my first race, by my first half. I did Austin with ITBS. It was very painful because I didn't have classical training. I didn't have the knowledge that goes with, hey, guess what? You need hip and glute strength and you're overstriding. You're an idiot. You don't know how to run, you know? So having coaching, I was with another club locally and then I found Purple Patch, and it's like learning all of the ins and outs of the sport, all the details. The details matter. The details matter. And that's what propelled me forward in those two sports from, you know, this youthful, you say, in the 10 years, there's a lot to learn. It really is.
It really is, and you can't rush a lot of it. You have to learn a lot of it, you know, gradually over time. That's why we talk about embrace the journey so much. So you just highlighted one. My next question was going to be, in your early years, what were the biggest challenges that you faced? You just highlighted one, which was a pretty instant injury when you got cracking. Running-based injury is very, very common. What other challenges did you have when you reflect on your sort of training journey? It's always interesting to unpack those.
Well, you don't know what you don't know, as they like to say, right? So when it mm-hmm. came to swimming, you know, a key issue there was just thinking you could power through and go fast. You know, so swimming, again, I know it comes down to form again, just like we were talking about with running, but it's literally thinking when you're a cyclist, I have the engine. I mean, that's how I got injured, right? I have the engine. I can run fast, but I will blow the car up because all the parts are not ready to go that fast. And swimming was the same way. You're just plowing through the water, not even rotating, not even the simplest thing. And so with coaching, suddenly it's like, yeah, Jeff, this is how you swim, right? Not like this. And this is how the hand enters the water. I think my biggest challenge up front was just not even knowing what I don't know. And then also, of course, you know, not going at it alone initially was, I think a lot of us do that. Let's just see if this takes, let's see if I'm going to even enjoy doing this. And then you realize pretty quickly that without some formal coaching of some kind, whatever it might, you know, might take, without any coaching, you are going to make so many mistakes that could be easily fixed quickly. You know, yes, it takes time, like you said. I've learned all this over a course of time, but it definitely can lower the risk of getting hurt, increase your ability to learn and maybe not get frustrated too. There were times with swimming that I was like, you know what, this is not working. I'm not a swimmer. This is not working. Maybe I can do some kind of run bike thing or something. And I tried everything. I won't bore you with those details, but it also can get so frustrating you want to quit. So I think with proper coaching and a proper community around you, that allows you to overcome some of those challenges that we're talking about. That happened to a lot of us early on in the sport.
Yeah, I love talking to you because I can't help but go on tangents. But coaching is interesting because I'm a coach, so I'm going to value. I'm going to stand up on the soapbox and say coaching is really valuable. You know, it's important. But I think one of the things that if I reflect on my journey as an athlete, I was an incredibly loyal athlete. So I sort of almost parental, looking at my probably parental through my lens. I just wanted to please my coaches. But that didn't make me a really good coached athlete because I would just run through barn doors. So I didn't have any autonomy. But it's very, very difficult, whether you're coached or otherwise, when you're doing the doing, to emerge from the weeds. And I think the coach, some form of coach, enabling perspective, giving you guidance, helping you course correct, enabling you to pull back, that's the valuable stuff. And I think there's often people misunderstand coaching. The why I talked about sort of some of my failures as a coached athlete was that I always viewed the coach as the person that was just going to deliver the magic program that would unlock everything.
Yep.
Versus a really fruitful coaching relationship in everything where it's like, actually, I'm still doing the doing. I'm still in control of my program. This person has got the wisdom, the perspective, the expertise to help me get the most out of my efforts and make smart decisions. It's really different than just unlocking these key workouts, but anyway, but back to the discussion at hand, but find that very, very interesting. I do want to say, I do want to ask something around your writing, because you came from a writing background. But one of the things you said to me before we came onto the show to actually record it was, I thought I knew it all when it came to bike riding. And so you were doing interval riding, but not with a form and not what we call at Purple Patch strength endurance work, which is low cadence work at high torque. Right. Can you just unpack that a little bit for me, what you meant by that? Because I never asked.
Yeah, you know, it's easy. It's easy when you're hanging with those guys in Dallas at the back of that little Peloton there, or sometimes the front, they play games, right? That you've got it figured out. It's easy to build that much confidence because you're a strong cyclist. But then you, over time, you learn, listen, there's something to be gained from doing, you know, different kinds of workouts indoors, strength endurance work, low cadence. I didn't do low cadence until I met you. Never.
Interesting.
Never, ever, ever. I mean, I did intervals when it was hip, when it was the thing to do, right?
Yep.
Intervals have been around for a while. It's not a new thing. And that's, I would put the video, I want to say the VHS tape, but I mean, I think it was at least a DVD. I would put it in and do the intervals. I would be loyal. Like you said, I would just do the work and whatever, but you figure out, depending on who your coach is, that there's more to cycling than just doing the work. Yes. You have to realize there's a skill set. And I'll tell you, to this day, I'll admit it in front of everybody, I'm still not perfect in my pedal stroke. And I'll be doing my workouts with Purple Patch and with my buddies. I still ride with the same Purple Patch folks that I have since 2019, since we started riding together. And we'll be, hey, pull up on the backside. Come on, loosen up, you know, get the shoulders loose and all these things. It's like, I'm sure I wasn't doing any of those things when I was riding before being coached.
No, most don't.
Yeah. No. So it's easy. It's easy to be lulled into that confidence that you're doing it right enough. Maybe it's not that you're doing it right. You're doing it right enough to do well. And it's like, but you could be doing better. And here's the thing, Matt, when you're a cyclist only, at the end of that hard t-shirt ride, you get a beer. You don't go run a marathon, right? So it's also easy to say I'm doing it well enough because I'm done. And if I have to go run a marathon, I remember Wisconsin, the full there, my legs were locked because those hills, they're badass, you know? So I had locked quads for an entire marathon. I obviously didn't bike it correctly. So, I mean, that was before Purple Patch, but it definitely, I think confidence, you can be overconfident when you're coming into two sports like that.
I want to do a slight detour here, not going too far down the rabbit hole, because we're going to come back to community a little bit later in our conversation. But you mentioned riding with the same group since 2019, so for the last 5 years or so. Now, you're based in Dallas. Most people spring to, okay, you're based in Dallas. Maybe there's a hub of you in Dallas. So this cast of crew, just give me a couple of the cities or a few of the cities where these folks are based that you're riding with on video every single week. Where are they all based? You're in Dallas.
I'm in Dallas, but I ride with Portland. I ride with Victoria or Calgary. I ride with Michigan and Idaho and a couple of Michigans. And what's funny is, here's the funny story. I went to do Waco 70.3, and I learned that there's a Purple Patch athlete competing there. I meet him at the race, and he lives 5 minutes from me. Had never met him before. I'm riding with people all over the country, and here it is. And now I ride with Joe on Saturdays occasionally. He rides with my posse now. But, I mean, it was so bizarre. But, yeah, I've been riding with those folks since – and a few others since 2019, right before COVID. So, I mean, it was, wow, a godsend. As you know, I kind of built a community of riders to ride with on Tuesday and Thursday mornings because we do our own thing before work. And I'll tell you, we have said many a time that, oh, thank goodness I did this one with my friends and not waited till after work and did it by myself.
Do it solo. Makes a big difference. And these people are genuinely your friends now. It's fantastic that you, you know, like connected through a common passion, but in all different levels. And just for listeners, you know, so that they can understand, you're obviously different time zone from here in San Francisco, Tuesday, Thursday, West Coast, and people with more flexible schedules. I'm then coaching live. I've got my group in the center in San Francisco, and I've got people all over the world. And it's funny, we go to a training camp, and someone will come in, Anna, from my little group, and I meet her for the first time a year or so ago. She's like, hi, how's it going? Because we already know each other really well, because you're part of this connect community. Yeah. We will come back to the importance of that and your journey, but I want to keep it narrowly focused on you first and talk about now, who's counting, but I think you've been with Purple Patch for 6 years now, something like that, 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, something like that.
So I want to go back of some of the shifts that have occurred, and I'm not asking this, you know, Purple Patch. There's been an evolution in your performance. Some of it is the maturation curve of just becoming a smarter athlete. Some of it is your genuinely coached now, and we talked about the value of that. What are some of the elements that maybe you can highlight that you feel as an athlete have been most important for you? And, you know, whether it's training, whether it's habits, whether it's mindset, whether it's strategies, you know, integrating walk breaks that we love to do, the educational side, what are some of the aspects that you think have been most impactful for you, some of the changes that you've made over the last years?
Well, an easy one that comes to mind, and it's a broken record for a lot of people, and they don't want to hear it, is strength mm-hmm. workouts. I've been working out with Mike, you know, on my little computer here. I move it to Mondays and Thursday or Fridays, and get that done. Just get it done.
Yeah.
And I learned a hard lesson when I got ITBS. That stays with you forever. It's like it's not something you want to get again. And it's all about hip and glute strength and all that. And I did the PT. So I'm like, and actually that's when I discovered the podcast, Secrets Out. I would listen to you while doing my PT. That's when I joined Purple Patch, right? You know, soon after.
Interesting, yeah.
So kind of funny that you were in my ears a long time ago, even when I was injured. But strength, critical to avoiding injury, yes, but being a stronger cyclist, a stronger swimmer, core strength. So that was one of the key things that Purple Patch gave me. But again, I'll never forget when you had Sarah pregnant and everything on a treadmill, and you're doing, here are the 5 things you need to do to be a good runner. She was doing it pregnant. If she could do it pregnant on a treadmill, I think I can learn it and figure it out on my journey. And so just simplifying maybe how to be good at these other two sports was critical for me. So mm-hmm. It's not just that you're talking about how to do it. You're showing us how to do it. And then, of course, with the cycling, on the videos that we do, the live classes you do, you getting off the bike and talking through things to think about, things to do when you're on the bike. The visual part is, I think, one of the big wins for Purple Patch over the last couple of years is that people can see what they're supposed to be doing, not just hear you coach us on it. Nutrition's been big. I've listened to, you know, all the podcasts, obviously, and you've talked about nutrition a lot of different ways and had guests talk about nutrition, and it does give us a mindset on how important that is. So, and of course, you know, recovery, rest, and all that kind of thing. Being smart about all
the stuff that is non-negotiable if you're Purple Patch. It's funny, you smiled for folks that listen. You smiled as you said that, because it's just such a part of the fabric of the program. So I want to ask you that. You're very busy. You've got a demanding role in life. How is the sport, the journey of sport? Do you feel, because I talk about this, of the value of sport, and it's great, and you achieve, and you've been to the World Championships, etc. What's the impact been on you as a human being, you as an executive?
Well, one could argue I'm a pretty goal-centered kind of person.
Yeah, one might argue that.
If you know me at all, you know I'm a goal-centered kind of person, and that's in my career, and it has been also in sport. But defining those goals carefully, I think, is really important. And for me, when it's come down to it with triathlon, it's not just going to a world championship and all that. It's also, I think for me, the role of sport in my life has just been able to give back within the sport, you know, to take, but also to give. There's a wonderful, amazing community within triathlon, cycling too, where you do make friendships for life, and you are able to help people through their journey and things of that nature. So for me, the role of sport in my life has been, I don't want to identify myself as a triathlete, but it's a part of who I am.
Yep.
It's a part of my DNA now. You know, I can't imagine life without being a triathlete. It'd be weird. So that's part of it. But going back to the goals and everything else, I like to challenge myself. I like to push myself, and it might not be that I'm going to be on a podium at that race, because I'm going to California and there's going to be 100 people that are vying for that podium. They're loaded with talent over there, you know, for a race like that. So what is your goal if you're going up against them? Your goal is to try and break 5:10 or 5 or break whatever, or have the best run of your life, you know, things like that. You can definitely still challenge yourself with unique and creative goals within the sport. So many that you could come up with. And then of course the role, you know, I think you alluded to it, you know, community, we can talk about it in a minute, but, for me, it's also just who I identify with to a certain degree, and being able to, I mean, you were talking about these folks that I ride with on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Some people cherry pick their races because they want to win that race. I pick my races based on who's going or who I can go with. The people that I ride with on weekdays, I've gone and raced with them in Hawaii, raced with them in Victoria, right? And had that experience of meeting them in person, like you were talking about. You know, it's to me, that's like, it adds another dimension to why we do this. If I couldn't do it alone, I couldn't imagine I'm just going to be a triathlete and do it this way. I mean, I've gotten people to go do an Ironman for the first time. I've got a guy that I pseudo coach. He's almost 80 years old, and we're just trying to get him to 80. He's done a million sprints and some smaller distance races, and he's getting up there in age. I mean, we really have to keep Band-Aids on him. But to see him achieve that goal, but even at the other end of the spectrum, not 80s, but 5 years old, 6 years old. I've coached 230 kids on how to ride, how to learn to ride without training wheels.
Fantastic.
Do you remember you taught Baxter how to ride a bike? Yes.
Yep. I did. Yeah.
You remember that moment and how it felt in your heart? Do you remember how it felt when he
100%
and he was riding?
Yeah.
Yeah. That feeling that you had, I've got the chance to experience it 230 times over the last 15 years. Over and over again, it's always the same feeling, that child taking off on a bike. That's that feeling right there. That's what triathlon, that's what it feels like. It's the best way I can describe what the sport means to me, is that little feeling in your heart when you're like being with your buddies and racing or just walking the course together, whatever it is. It's so fun.
You know that feeling that you felt there? That's the sort of feeling that I feel when you qualify to the world championships. Oh, and got a lot of athletes. That's what coaching is. It's great. And let's go down the rabbit hole of open up community, because community is a funny word to me. As a part of Purple Patch, we got a large group of athletes. It's international. And when you say community, it can mean a lot of different things to different people. And it, like anything, you've got core people that are wholly invested, and you've got the voyeurs and the people that I don't need it. I consistently see in any arena that anyone going on an individual journey, whenever you shift towards team or squad or leaning in, individuals do better, because it starts to drive a performance culture, and there's a whole bunch of reasons for it. Your nickname is the cruise director, and the reason you've done that is just as it emerged out of something that I didn't know about you, teaching all those kids to ride a bike, you are giving, giving, giving in so many ways. Hosting the ride that we've talked about already, really active on our community boards, helping people, almost having a coaching role in that really organic, suitable way of providing advice and counseling, connecting people geographically. There's so many cases that we could go on for 5 or 10 minutes just talking about everything that you do. So you're giving. And I want to ask a question because in my thesis, by you giving that much, you're getting a lot there as well, aren't you? Are you getting a lot out of that as well? Like, what do you get out of that?
I mean, I genuinely like to help people, but when you receive the help from them to start with, you receive, you can't coach us 24/7. You can't be there for us all the time. You're great, but you can't be there. So who's going to pick up the pieces when you're not there? Who's going to tell Jeff, you know, it's 41 degrees outside, I have to go do a brick, so I have to go from sweaty bike to putting on the right clothes to go outside. You know, it's always a pain in the butt. You know, and Bob will say, well, throw on a tech tee and then throw on your heavier shirt. Oh, okay. I mean, sorry, coach, you never told me that. I wouldn't expect you to, you know, but it's like all these little things that your community can teach you, can teach me, right? I have been the benefactor of this for a long time. Even when it was just cycling, I had to learn from my friends how to cycle better, you know, and you take and take and take. It's nice to give because you know that they're going to appreciate what you're sharing with them or what you're doing for them. Or you know, when we went through COVID, Matt, it was,
oh my goodness, we went through that together.
Yeah, you know, so I was messaging individuals, you know, how's it going? You know, especially ones I knew weren't, you know, come join our ride or things like that. One of our athletes lost their father-in-law, so it was like follow up with him. You know, just the little things that people know you care because it makes such a difference for them. So It just makes me feel good. I guess I'm a little bit spoiled. I mean, it feels good to help people. And we've got so many athletes with so many unique stories. And I've learned from a lot of them. So I feel I owe the community something to give it back. You know, I guess it's that simple for me.
Yeah, I think the lesson is, because I don't think that there are many people that don't appreciate the power of leaning into team, community, squad, etc., and really helping others and the benefits that you will get. It's an individual sport in which one earns the rewards from it, but it's with training, hard work, commitment, smart decision making, the supporting habits, recovery, nutrition. But the edge, the X factor, the amplifier universally is when I see people lean in, they get more out of the journey. They get greater rewards. And I think that extends to it, you know, sport not being the thing that you mentioned it earlier, but defines you and the results not define you, but it sure helps you become a better person. And I think that's just, and show up better in other areas of life. And I think a key to unlocking that is community and sharing and being a part of it and helping others, mentoring others. You get so much more of a reward for it. And I think you're the beacon of purple patch for that. I mean, honestly, why the biggest reason I wanted to talk to you about it. Let me ask you one more question. And this is, as you sit now and you're sort of a decade plus into your journey, and this is your opportunity, is what would you, if you wanted to leave the show and extend your wisdom with one or two lessons or takeaways to say, everyone listening to this show, appreciate this or take this perspective, take this mindset, what would be the one or two takeaways that you, Jeff, would share with listeners?
Wow. Well, one of them we kind of talked about just this, and we glossed over it, so we'll hit it again. Details matter, right? In this sport, the littlest change that you can make to your gait, to your swim form, to how you ride the bike, whatever it is. Those little details will eventually pay dividends. And I used to be that guy who'd be like, oh, that's such a small thing. That's not gonna get me to here. You know, it's such a small thing. But our sport is very repetitive. We do that same small thing 1,000, 2,000, you know, thousands of times, right? So it does add up. So those little details matter. So when you preach the different types of things we can do, and sometimes it gets repetitive and we are like, enough already, but it's like, I need that reminding, right? So those details are really, really important to me. I think the other thing I learned, and I started learning this a little bit before Purple Patch. It was funny. I asked a coach on my previous team, how long do you think it'll be before I can qualify? I mean, I wasn't dead serious about it, but I was like, how long? Oh, he's like, well, Jeff, you've just kind of started. It's going to be a couple years. And I'm like, a couple years? What?
Yeah.
I thought we were going to be in months, not year. I mean, I have to do this for a couple years before I get dividends from, and you know, now all these years later, you realize that the other gem I would share is just patience is paramount, right? You can't invent yourself. I mean, you didn't invent yourself in a year. It was an evolution that got you to where you are today. Or any athlete we look at, or any professional, executive, whatever it is, even as a parent, we don't start out knowing anything, and we evolve and learn. So you have to be patient with that process. You have to be willing to make the mistakes, learn from the mistakes, ask questions, realize you don't know everything. Again, lean on your community to learn faster if you can, but it's going to take time. And, so yeah, to me, it's a hard thing for me. It was one of the harder lessons to learn, actually, that patience will prevail. It'll eventually pay off.
Patience. And that means you better obviously be consistent and try hard, but while you're doing that and you're being patient, you might as well make it fun. You might as well, you know, like, so you can work really hard, but you better enjoy it as well and allow yourself to have fun along the way.
I think you stole my last one. The third and last one is, yeah, if you don't make this fun, it's we joke about it. We're not paid. We're amateur athletes. We're not paid to compete, right? I mean, when people ask us all the time, why do you do this? Why do you torture yourself? Why do you not drink on a Saturday night when we have a race the next day or whatever it is? Why do you do all this? And it's like, well, it's fun. But yeah, if it's not fun, then you wouldn't do all this stuff. Yeah, you gotta find your fun in it for sure. Even when it hurts.
Jeff, thank you so much. And appreciate you being on the show.
Oh, and I appreciate being here. Oh, you know what? Before we part ways, there is one more thing. You were talking about lessons learned. There's one more thing I think that's important. Is that, as I was talking about, I entered the sport like not knowing anything about swimming and running. And there's a lot of people out there that I think are intimidated by jumping into our sport because it looks really hard.
Yeah.
It looks like it's easy to fail. They don't have the experience. But my advice to them, one more lesson there is just go for it. You have to be willing to try and fail, you know, learn the lessons from it and grow and continue to blossom within those hard sports. To anybody thinking I can't do that because you see people doing this hard thing, just try. My last gem is just give it a try. You'd be surprised what you can do when you allow yourself to get out of your comfort zone and do something new, for sure.
It is a powerful message. You know, we do starting to do a lot of work with leadership teams and organizations, and as we come out and emerge from the seminars, my takeaway is often take on a challenge. And a lot of people, it's normal. Most people struggle to do that because of the anxiety of failure. And actually taking it on. And just, I always like to say, just jump off a cliff and flap your arms because you might just find out you can fly. And if you can.
You know what else, Matt? It ties back to community too.
It does.
You have a community that's the net. You can jump off that cliff. We'll catch you.
We will.
You're not going to fail catastrophically. we will catch you and you'll rebound from even the failure that comes from learning.
I think so. And I think that sport is the safest venue to take the risk. It's not like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to, you know, like living in this city, so I'm going to move across the country. Well, that's a pretty big risk. Or I'm going to change careers. That's a pretty big risk. Sport is risk-free. So you can, it's a great venue. And when you lean into a community as well, as you've put it so nicely, it's the safety net. It's the place that's going to facilitate success and ensure that you grow and learn. So it's a great one and a great way to end the show. So Jeff, thank you for being on the show. That's what I said it. But also thank you for being a part of Purple Patch. All of the support, the education, the guidance, the counsel, your title is the cruise director and it's well earned. We deeply appreciate it. And you're such an integral part to the community that we've talked a lot about, to the team, and I'm proud of your own personal journey as well. So thanks once again. It was terrific fun and I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it too. It's an honor to be a part of this community. I encourage everyone to join us.
Good man.
Thanks, Matt, as always.
All right. Cheers, yeah. Jeff. We're going to introduce and welcome Purple Patch athlete, Marcel. Marcel, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Taking your time out of your busy day, you get to have, well, I've got a nice cup of coffee with me. I hope you're loaded up there in Florida. But we want to talk about your journey a little bit. And you're part of a series that we're doing, shining the spotlight on you guys that are down in the trenches doing the hard work. And I think your story has a lot of lessons that listeners can draw from and apply to their own journey throughout the sport. And so if you're willing, we're just going to dig in and talk about your journey, some of the lessons, some of the training methodology, and hopefully it will be a little bit of fun. So why don't we kick off, as I like to do, with everybody, and let's introduce yourself and go back all the way to the start. So tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, living situation, growing up. Who is Marcel Lopez?
So as Matt said, my name is Marcel. I'm 44 years old. I'm born and raised in San Juan, Puerto Rico. Currently living in Miami, Florida. I moved here about 14 years ago now, coming up to 14 years. Met my wife here, so married, and I have a 5-year-old boy.
So you are the proverbial time-starved athlete in many ways.
You're pretty much
still in the hurricane of it all. Yeah.
Yes, that is true. Now it's even getting busier because now he's getting into, you know, little extracurricular activities like tennis, swimming. Trying to get him to swim from a younger age. Maybe it'll help him down the line.
Well, we're going to dig into that with you a little bit. We were just laughing about your swimming expertise aligned with my running expertise, but we'll get there in a couple of moments. And professionally, what do you do? What's your background professionally?
So I've been in the IT world for 24, 25 years now, doing from networking to currently IT security / consulting. Working at a local firm here down in Miami.
Fantastic. And let's go into sports. I always like to do this. Always I like the background. Triathlon attracts a really broad range of people from a wide variety of athletic backgrounds. So you growing up in San Juan, what was your sort of childhood like so far as sport?
So my first introduction to sports basically was kind of track and field. I put it into quotes because it was not anything like official. It was kind of like in the field days and in elementary school, kind of like running.
Yeah.
And running the shorter distances, going fast. Or I thought I was going fast. I don't know. but yeah, I mean, it woke up kind of like a competitiveness, or showed my competitiveness. As a person, I'm pretty much type A, I would say. So, and then from there, got into volleyball at the end of elementary school and going into high school. And at the same time, I was playing baseball, which those two sports, I mean, can be anything further from endurance sports. I dislike doing running. anything that had to do more than a mile. So that's pretty much my background in sports.
And and then here we are many years later talking about half Ironman, 70.3 racing, etc. So how on earth did you find your way into triathlon?
So it's funny because I already had started kind of cycling again. So I had my road bike and I was going out like weekend stuff, nothing structured or anything. It was just riding on the weekends. And I saw that a former classmate of in high school, he completed the 70.3 Puerto Rico. And me being like the type A, I'm like, oh, if he could do it, I definitely can do this thing. So I started thinking, I'm going to register to do 70.3 Puerto Rico without thinking that swimming, it was just jump in the water and just, yeah, it'll be easy. And that's when I realized I started training. I contacted a very good local coach, which learned a lot from him. A lot of the things that I know today are due to, thankfully, I landed with a good coach. So I went to my first pool session and I couldn't even get to the other side of the pool without feeling like I was drowning. And that's when it hit me that, nope, you're not doing a 70.3 anytime soon. So that's kind of where it started.
And now since then, you have completed 70.3s also. You've done very well. You're still chasing the top 10 in your age group, you mentioned. So, but you've got now a solid background. So why don't you just give sort of a couple of your heady heights of accomplishments?
Oh, well, so, I mean, I think the first year, the first couple of years, I kind of stayed doing sprints because I wasn't really that confident in my swim. But then as I grew more confident again, I started delving into longer distances. Did my first Olympic in Cleveland, which was one of the worst water conditions that everybody had seen in nationals. That was my first DNS. I pretty much got in the water, like got panicked, and I'm like, I'm not swimming out there. So I just turned around, gave my chip, and that was it. So that was a little bit humbling. Mm-hmm. But then I did my first 70.3 in 2019, Augusta. So that kind of did pretty good for being my first. And then, yeah, I mean, I think that my biggest accomplishment to date was I wanted to go, one of my first targets was going on to 5 hours. So I was able to do that one in 2021 in North Carolina. Current assisted. So I would say that some of that is thankful to the current. But yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty fulfilling sport so far.
Well, I want to dig into that a little bit because one thing that's very clear so far is the swim is your big weakness. So you've got a relatively robust background in cycling, running is a relative strength, etc. I know the catalyst was seeing your buddy do the 70.3 in Puerto Rico and think I can do that too. But now you've been into it. I'm always interested because triathlon is an interesting sport in which almost everybody has a weakness. So swim is clearly yours. The run was mine. I came from a swimming background, so polar opposite of worlds. Is that now you're into the sport, is that a part of the appeal in many ways that you're not just focusing on proving your strengths, but you're also sort of forced to back against the wall in order to be successful, you have to improve a weakness? Is that part of an appeal or do you just wish you were great at everything?
I mean, I would say so, absolutely. Like you said, I mean, one of my current kind of goals is being able to qualify for 70.3 World Championship. So in a way, if I want to do that, I have to get better at swimming. There's no going around it. I cannot just go in the water and just take my time. So in a way, it forces me to just keep working, keep improving as much as possible. Or at least getting my swim to a point that it's not a hindrance to the entire race. So, you know, getting out of the water with enough energy that, then to attack the bike and the run legs. So.
Yeah, it is one of those things that if you think about the sport, and in fact, if you expand it to broader life, there's very few occasions where we naturally really work on something that we are weak at. And I think that's sort of really interesting, not just for your story, but you're a great example of this. If you do go on and qualify for 70.3 Worlds, it would have been because of something that most people don't do, which is to face a challenge in something that is quite daunting, something that is clearly a weakness in which must be overcome. And in many ways, that's different than, you know, imagine if I said I want to swim the English Channel. Let's just make it up. Well, I come from a swimming background, and all it really is hard work in something that I'm strong at. But if I wanted to qualify to Boston or run the rim to rim in Colorado, whatever it might be, well, that's something that's a clear weakness. And so I do think that's something compelling about the sport for you. I want to dig into your mindset a little bit, because we're gonna log into your training a little bit. You mentioned to me prior to the conversation that quite often you were really hard on yourself. You've already mentioned you were type A. You said I was really almost judgmental on yourself around training. Can you just expand more of that? And the real question is, how have you managed to evolve through that or overcome that? And how did sort of being a part of Purple Patch help that?
Well, I mean, it's so before, I would say a couple of years back, I would think that in order to get better at either swim, bike, run, either of the three disciplines, you really needed to, every single time you went to do a track session, 800s or 400s, whatever it was, and or intervals on the bike, VO2 max intervals, that you had to either hit your target numbers or go above them. And if you didn't do that, then that would mean that, okay, you're not improving. You're just either getting worse or getting weaker, or your fitness is not increasing at the rate that it needs to, et cetera. So obviously, as time has gone by, I can go back and think of, I don't know, a bunch of sessions that really didn't go as planned or as prescribed. But then I go to a race and I'm able to either exceed or at least meet my expectations for that race. So now in hindsight, I can definitely say that that has nothing to do with how are you going to perform on any given day. It's just on that day, that's what you had, and you just learn to deal with it and just, okay, you didn't hit whatever the numbers were, but you showed up, you trained. So it's just like it's money in the bank, I guess.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, if you think about what it's called training or practice. Some people call it that. That's really what it is. It isn't called Judgment Day, and I think that mindset is very, very common amongst athletes. Yeah, where you're sort of every single day, we want to see validation, we want to see improvement, and it's in part because of your motivation, because of your drive, because of your commitment. So it's a really sort of natural, organic emotion to have. How has being a part of Purple Patch evolved that? Is that something that maybe the community or the coaching or like how has it evolved your perspective, or is it just the experience of as you've got wisdom in the sport? Do you think?
I think it's a combination of everything, I would say. I mean, like I mentioned, my previous coach, one of the things he also kind of liked to emphasize was learn how efforts feel. Like learn to go by feel, not necessarily what a little computer is telling you.
Yep.
And that for me is super hard because I'm obsessed with numbers and I love data. And if I'm doing out an interval and not seeing that number specifically there, it kind of drives me nuts a little bit. Now I just tend to ignore it for the most part. And then obviously the Purple Patch methodology is kind of like the same, like going by efforts, understanding what your body is doing or feeling, how zone three, zone four, zone five feels. The community as well, everybody kind of feeds into each other, and results from everybody and the community kind of show that it's just about showing up. And obviously, I mean, one of the reasons why I started working with John on one-to-one was to kind of get a little bit more specific feedback into what I'm doing and around my specific races.
Yeah. So yeah.
That's also helped.
You're working with the right guy. You're sort of something that's actually pretty common at Purple Patch. You are sort of both a squad member. So a slight, let's call it more autonomous program, leaning into the team of coaches and the broader education and obviously the community to working directly with John, our swim expert. You're also got the benefit of having the guy for swimming helping you, giving you feedback on that. So that's positive. I'm interested in your shift of training approach globally. And you mentioned one thing that I want to dig into a little bit, which is you said realizing or not approaching each week with every session being key and how to go easy. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. So one of the biggest, I think, mistakes I did before understanding that piece was, especially running, I would not go easy and run on easy days. I mean, I would have a long run and I wasn't going all out, but I was going too fast or too hard for sure. And it took me a while to understand that going easy doesn't mean that it's not gonna make you slow. It's just going to do what it's meant to do, which is build your aerobic side. So it's and on the bike as well. Sometimes I would go out for 2 or 3 hours, 4 hours on the bike. I would come back and look at Training Peaks. My normalized power was like 145 watts, and I'm like, that's weak. So
and appropriate, but that's not how it feels.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it gives you that endurance of being able to then in a race ride hard for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and then have enough in the tank to then run well off the bike. So it's just a matter of it's years, it's experience, like everything you learn. You learn to trust the process, learn to trust the your coaches, that what they're telling you is they're guiding you in the right direction.
So what are some other sort of shifts in the overall approach that I think will be interesting for listeners? I've got my magic list that you gave to me here, but I'd love for you to expand on that. So beyond going easy, not every session being key, there are a few things that you really have embraced over the last couple of years that have helped you, particularly in the fact that you do have travel, you do have a lot of competing demands in life. But what are some of the specific sort of training approaches that you've really evolved?
So strength, it's been something that since joining Purple Patch, which was one of the reasons that I joined Purple Patch, was that I knew that I needed to do something specific to the sport around strength. So I've integrated strength a little bit like more into my program. It hasn't been easy. I think that this year so far, it's finally I can definitely say right now that it's consistent. Like last year, I did at the beginning of the year, I did that 30-day thing that we did in January, and I stuck to it. But then as the year progressed, I kind of dropped it. I didn't drop it 100%, but it could have been better. So this year, I'm making the effort to at a minimum, at least have one strength workout a week. So far it's consistent. Another thing I wasn't doing consistently was after every workout, having a protein shake or some food with carbs and protein to kind of get my body in that recovery mode. So that's improved how my consistency, how my training progresses. And in terms around travel, when I was traveling a lot, I couldn't take my bike. So I kind of learned how to shift certain, okay, I can do swim, bike, I can do swim, run, strength. So I would obviously, on the days that I had a bike, I would swim or do strength training and learning how to move things around to at least not just to do something, but something that would be
with purpose,
productive to my training.
The post-workout fueling, I think, is quite often people ask me in interviews, what's the number one thing? And you've just highlighted actually two of them that will be always my number one, and I can't separate them, which is to go easy in the easy workouts. I think that's fundamental so that you can string together consistency. Most people that struggle, whether it's injuries, whether it's fatigue, whether it's lack of sort of return on investments or adaptations, is typically going too hard in the easy stuff. That's always one that I highlight. The second is post-workout fueling. And if you can integrate that as an almost religion, you know, it's an absolute non-negotiable habit. It has such a positive knock-on effect in your consistency, your adaptations, your energy in the day. So I think those are great. And then just the last thing on strength training, it's really difficult for many people that are enthusiasts that love to, in this case, triathlon, swim, bike, and run, to really stick with strength throughout the course of the season. We're now recording this mid-March. Stay with it. Like, give yourself the experiment over the course of this year. And don't correlate it directly to faster, slower in your first race of the year, second race of the year, etc. Just go through the year and then pause, come back and say, okay, because it's a bona fide, genuine 9-10 months that you've done it. So that's a habit. And just see how you feel functionally in life, as well as, of course, the objective side of the results. So I would say almost the three pillars of this is what I want to see around an athlete doing it really, really well, which is terrific. We also talked a little bit about a couple of things, walk breaks. I want to go there. And then on the bike, we have some pretty specific strength work that we do on the bike and terrain management. Now, you live in Florida. So can you why don't we focus? We'll hold on the walk breaks for now, but why don't you talk about your bike training a little bit beyond the endurance stuff?
Well, I mean, you just mentioned I live in Florida, which the highest mountains here are bridges. So yep. And usually where I train on the weekends, it's just flat. I actually avoid the bridge, not because I don't want to do it. It's just because it's safer not to have to do the bridge. So it's challenging because I like, obviously when we do races, for example, Chattanooga, which I did last year, St. George, which I did in 2021, Augusta, which I did in 2019, those are rolling / hilly courses. So there's a lot of climbing and a lot of demand on knowing how to shift, knowing how to purposely like use your cadence in order to maximize your effort. And as well as descending, which I've kind of been a little bit more comfortable now, not because of any specific training that I'm doing. It's just, again, experience. I feel a lot more comfortable. My bike that I have right now has disc brakes, so it helps knowing that your brakes are not just going to heat up and not work at the end of a descent. But in terms of climbing, I do most of my bike training indoors, two sessions indoors, and I try to go out at least once for my long rides. And before I wasn't really doing anything. Well, before, when I joined Purple Patch, we still did strength endurance stuff on the bike. I did it on Swift, but there was not that focus and learning on how to use your bike and your body to attack those inclines. And that's one thing that since starting the Velocity platform, it's kind of been game changing in terms of learning how to use gears, how to use cadence in order to maximize your speed return. And then one of the funny things is that every single race that I've done on a hilly course, I am passing so many people on the downhill. that it's crazy. Like, because a lot of people, like we see, they reach the top of the hill and they just relax.
Yeah.
Instead of gaining speed and then relaxing on the downhill, which you're not going to go that much faster. So learning those little details, it's just free speed, free time that you're getting with very little effort and in a way.
Yeah, well, what it is, it's, I mean, I'm not a fan of the term free speed, but there is sort of, because I think it's well earned, and your input over there. I'll say, and it's just slightly tangential, but, you know, when we decided to transition to the platform, and I made this decision to go to the Velocity platform because I realized that it was a really effective coaching tool. And I had the hypothesis at the time that it would help people become better bike riders. I am even, frankly, quite surprised at how impactful it has been, number one, and how realistic it is. Because, you know, and for people, listeners that have not been on the platform, our ability to basically create any sort of terrain and for the bike and the trainer to interact in a way that is directly real world. So how you carry speed, how you can build speed. As a coach, it's really, really interesting. And just last week, we were doing some terrain management side of stuff. And as everybody sort of, you know, synthetically, hypothetically, or proverbially crested the hill, I deliberately didn't say anything. And I had the whole of Studio One in San Francisco, everybody at home, keenly looking at their leg speed and saw them all accelerating. And I was like, that is behavior that you want. It's now ingrained in this is how I do it. So even you in the desperate flatlands of Miami, as sort of actually from home, genuinely able to do it. And there really isn't another platform like it. It's very, very special, I think. So we get to benefit from it, which is a great thing. Go ahead.
Yeah, and to add that, also in North Carolina last year, it was very windy. Mm. So pretty much on the way out, I would say 25, 30 miles, we were against a headwind. And I think that we've done certain sessions, which is, I think it's called Heads and Tails.
Yes.
Which is once, 3-4 minutes is simulating a headwind, and then the other one simulating a tailwind. And even here, that is something that I can practice because there's a lot of headwind.
Yeah,
I mean, on most of my rides, I would say 52-53% of it, it's a headwind. And knowing how to use my bike to assist me in getting quicker through it, it's a game changer, literally.
It is. And
I've done more.
Yeah, and sorry, I'm overriding because I'm coaching a little bit, but it is the, like what you're highlighting here, and I think this is one of the central reasons I wanted to have you on the show, is that you are IT guy, very metrics-based, very numbers-based, and what you've actually developed over the last couple of years is a toolkit that it's not just, you think about how we started, very harsh on yourself, every session needs to be good, otherwise it's a failure, and evolving to actually say, you know what, it's not just practice is practice, logging the time, doing the sessions to the best of your ability on the day. But in addition to that, I'm actually building a toolkit that you got real world application, which is, you deserve a lot of kudos for that. I know we're stacked up against time here. So I want to come just to sort of the results a little bit and the impact of this. You obviously become much better from an organizational effectiveness standpoint. Integrating strength training, post-workout fueling was really important. We didn't get to dig into sleep, but I know that's been a big catalyst for you. And then the whole mindset around training. I'm interested in what the outcome has been for you. If we're sort of treating this as a little bit of a case study, a lot's changed and evolved in your training, your habits, your mindset, and that, I think that's really central. So what's the impacts in your words?
I mean, I can use two races as good examples of how I've been able to apply pretty much a lot of the things and the lessons that and the education that we get from Purple Patch. In 2022, I did 70.3 Puerto Rico. So the Wednesday leading up to that week, I was traveling on Thursday. That Wednesday, I was setting my wheels and one of them just literally blew up my rims at 9 p.m. I had no spare, so I had to. Thankfully, I had a friend as a mechanic. He lent me a pair of wheels. But I got to Puerto Rico. Those are not my race wheels. I'm not used to them. The cassette, it wasn't compatible necessarily with the gears I had on my bike. So I had to do the entire race on four gears, and I could have just thrown the towel, which I thought about it when I got back into T2 before going out of the run, because I had no run legs. I knew that that run was going to be horrible, but you know, and I couldn't do it just because I didn't want to let myself down, and you know, and because I had to try. So I went out, I finished the run, even though it wasn't pretty, but I finished it. And then the second was that same year in North Carolina during the swim, my watch got ripped. So I pretty much did the entire race with nothing, no metrics. I had to go by feel. And that technically it's my 70.3 distance PR. So
there you go.
And that was totally by feel. And the lesson for me there was that sometimes I'm so focused on heart rate or power or whatever that I hold myself back, even though my body still has more to give. And being blind, I think that allowed me to push a little bit more because I didn't know what my heart rate was. I didn't know what the power was. So, and it was again, it's eye-opening.
You let the body do its thing.
Yep, pretty much.
How about broader life? We started the conversation with you're very busy, time starved. What's the impact been on your life globally?
I mean, I think it's the organizational skills are easier in terms of being able to make sure that I train, and then I have time to then either go to barbecue at a friend's house in the afternoon, or moving training around so that I can go to my kid's swim class. So stuff like that. Also, and it's funny because my wife always tells me all the time, like she doesn't understand how can I do it? Or how I have so much energy. And I think that part of the sport has given me a lot more energy to do all the other things around work and around training. And to an extent, it's an outlet. In terms of energy, I wouldn't say energy, but it mellows me, calms me down, so I'm not so reactive. So I can think things through a little bit better before doing something.
So if you wanted, if you had one chance to impart a lesson or two to the listeners, what would it be? As it applies to sport or life?
Be patient. I think if endurance sports is not something that you're going to get, it's not a, it doesn't happen overnight. It's very difficult. And if you really want to not only be good at it, but stay healthy and enjoy it, I think that being patient is one of the most important things, because that way you don't try to do too much at any given time, and then you know injuries or whatever it is gets you out of your routine.
Fantastic. Well, Marcel, thank you. Thank you so much for joining the show. I really appreciate it. And also thank you for being a part of Purple Patch. Thanks so much for putting your trust in us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
All right. Cheers. Guys, thanks so much for joining, and thank you for listening. I hope that you enjoyed the new format. You can never miss an episode by simply subscribing. Head to the Purple Patch channel of YouTube and you will find it there, and you could subscribe. Of course, I'd like to ask you, if you will subscribe, also share it with your friends. And it's really helpful if you leave a nice positive review in the comments. Now, any questions that you have, let me know. Feel free to add a comment and I will try my best to respond and support you on your performance journey. And in fact, as we commence this video podcast experience, if you have any feedback at all, as mentioned earlier in the show, we would love your help in helping us to improve. Simply email us at info@purplepatchfitness.com or leave it in the comments of the show at the Purple Patch page, and we will get you dialed in. We'd love constructive feedback. We are in a growth mindset, as we like to call it. And so feel free to share with your friends. But as I said, let's build this together. Let's make it something special. It's really fun. We're really trying hard to make it a special experience. And we want to welcome you into the Purple Patch community. With that, I hope you have a great week. Stay healthy. Have fun. Keep smiling, doing whatever you do. Take care.